Thank you, Hef, for having me here. As already introduced, I'm Xun, a new postdoc in CETA. And most of this work is actually done in Johns Hopkins when I was here earlier this year. So the title is about the statistical decoupling of the Lagrangian fluid in Newtonian cosmology. It's kind of a long title. So when we talk about the structure of the universe, what we're referring is the vast field of the matter distribution. So we can see them either from the large-scale structure observation, as shown on the left, which is coming from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, and also we can see them from the embodied simulation, so as shown on the right. So one thing we know about this structure is that they are hierarchical, which means that smaller scale always embedded in some larger scales. On the other hand, in our human language, we keep talking about the individual objects, like the halos, the void, the cluster, galaxy, all different kinds of objects. Well, and also about their different properties, their ages, their masses, their time evolution. The one obvious reason when we talk about them, because we see them, right, either in the observation or from the embodied simulation. On the other hand, sometimes it's very convenient for the model construction, for example, for the halo model, because I'm a kind of late time cosmologist. So halo model, the concept of a halo is very useful for constructing all kinds of different clustering properties or the small scale properties. However, as I already mentioned, in a hierarchical universe, the evolution of an individual galaxy is not isolated. You will always be affected by some surrounding environment. Now, let's take a look at this example of dark matter halos. As I already said, it's very useful for describing the large scale and also the smaller scale. It's hosting smaller scale galaxy formation. It's providing an environment for the smaller scales. But on the large scale, if you count the halos, it consists of the large scale structure. So in order to have this model to work, we need several different ingredients. First of all, if you want to describe the clustering, you need the spatial distribution of these halos. And if you want to describe the smaller scale, on the other hand, you need the density profile. And in order to describe the evolution of these halos, you need the collapsing criteria, or what I say here is a halo evolution model. So notice that I use the word model, which means most of the time it's not accurate. It's just the construction of the model, only for a few cases. For example, the halos, the spherical collapse. If you consider a homogeneous body of dark matter halos and collapse that, you will get the accurate result, and also for the ellipsoidal collapse, but not for other situations. So in general, they are very simplified models. Now, the reason why you can't get this model is because of two reasons. One is non-linearity. This is a highly non-linear object, right? And also because of non-locality, because you are constantly affected by your surrounding environment. Now, in Newtonian cosmology or late-time cosmology, the way you can write down your equation is just the Newtonian gravity plus the fluid dynamics. So what you have is, the first equation is just the continuity equation. And the second one is just the conservation equation for the velocity field. And again, for the gravity, it's governed by the Poisson equation, which is non-local, which means your gravitational force is determined by the whole universe. Well, since you are describing the evolution of individual objects, so it would be very convenient to write down in the Lagrangian frame. Simple, just transforming to the Lagrangian frame, your continuity equation becomes something like that, and then you have the actual evolution equation of this divergence. For spherical collapsing model, you don't have the shape information, so the shear tensor is also canceled, so this closes the system. And you can even simplify by writing those two equations into a second order differential equation, and it's trivial to solve that, and it take me a lot of time to find a paper really discuss this equation. So you can see that the x x-axis is just the scale factor, and the y-axis is just the density contrast. So eventually, at some time, you just diverge. Nonlinear evolution of the delta will just diverge to non-zero, to infinity. And at the time, so if you trace back linearly of this divergence back to the initial condition, you will predict the exactly same as the model like the spherical collapsing model. That's why, so this example just demonstrates that this Lagrangian fluid model can be useful for constructing the halo evolution. Now, in general, it's not so trivial anymore, because if you include the shape information, for example, if you include the velocity shear tensor, which is defined just as the symmetric traceless parts of the velocity gradient tensor, the Lagrangian evolution of this guy also depends on the tidal tensor, which is defined as, again, the traceless parts of the second order gradient of the gravitational potential. Now, the question is that, sorry. The tidal tensor.
The tidal tensor.
Right.
Okay.
So is that possible to write down a time evolution equation for this tidal tensor? Well, people tried. First of all, in Newtonian gravity, it's just it's the integration of the density distribution all over the universe. But my constantly saying Newtonian gravity, probably lots of people are thinking about general relativity. Actually, in general relativity, it's possible to write down the evolution equation with a tidal tensor from the Bianchi identity. Now, by doing so, the evolution with this, well, first of all, this capital EIJ is just exactly the same, the counterparts of the tidal tensor in GR, which is the electric part of the Weyl tensor. And then by doing so, you introduce also the magnetic part of the Weyl tensor. And you, again, have another equation for this guy, Hij, here. Fortunately, they are closed. So it's a closed system. You can solve that. But how about in Newtonian gravity? Because in Newtonian gravity, you don't have this guy. There's no counterpart of Hij here. So the easiest thing people can imagine, it just sets it to zero. Okay, this leads to the so-called silent universe model. And again, it's closed. You get the evolution equation with tidal tensor plus anything else. And of course, you can solve that. Here in this figure, just demonstrate how different this model compared to, for example, the Yudovitch formation. So it's kind of a weird parameterization. So the upper panel is the Yudovitch approximation. The lower panel for this model, and the x axis and the y axis is just some rotational invariant of velocity gradient tensor. It doesn't really matter. If I have time, I will show more later. But just demonstrate how different they are. Now, but very soon it was pointed out that if you take an appropriate approximation of the GR to the Newtonian limit, the evolution equation of this tidal tensor is actually also non-local. The source term of the tidal tensor time evolution equation is also non-local. So we just went back to the starting point. Then it led to some more effort trying to make some approximation to localize this equation, but doesn't really matter. So it's still an open question. So I did spend quite a lot of time discussing this kind of a history and trying to show, because this is the first time I present this result in this project. And so I just want everyone to understand the motivation here. Well, the question is that possible to really construct a non-linear but local theory of the Lagrangian fluid evolution equation? By local, I mean here, if you select a fixed number of degree freedom, like the density and the velocity gradient, the trajectory will be uniquely determined by the initial condition, not by the surroundings. Well, of course, there have been a lot of approximation done there. What is the best approach you can do? So by doing the local approximation, what do you mean? Does that mean you are selected one mean trajectory. So average over all the non-local trajectory, you get a mean trajectory. If that's the case, does that mean you have to have a statistical description? Now, assuming that this is what I'm trying to do, now, what if you have the data? If you have an n-order simulation, a different snapshot of the data, and you treat, if it's possible to trace a single fluid element from initial condition to the final state, what you will do? You just marry it, right? Given the given a fixed initial condition, you just select all the trajectories and take the mean of that trajectory. This is what you'll get. But the problem is, how can you analytically describe such a procedure? This then leads to the main topic of this of my work. So first of all, let's define our problem. We can define our dynamic variable here as a psi, the delta, density contrast, and the velocity, AIG is just a velocity gradient tensor, which can be decomposed as the divergence part, the theta here, and the tracely symmetric part of the sigma IJ as the shear tensor. And the Lagrangian evolution equation just simplified as a first order differential equation. Well, chi is a nonlinear functional form of the psi, your dynamic variable, plus your actual tidal tensor. So, which is shown in details, these three differential equations. Now, since I said I want to discuss the evolution of statistics first. Now, there are at least two ways you can do this. First, I think that probably the simplest to starting from the so-called, if you can trace the Lagrangian evolution of single particles. Now, what you start is from the, as a fixed Lagrangian position, or you ensemble different Lagrangian particles. First of all, you describe your fine-grained probability density function, because this fine-grained probability density function will be only non-zero at the point, as a value where your dynamic evolution equation predicted. So this means your fine-grained PDF is just a delta function, direct delta function. So, and then by definition, when you take the ensemble, for example, you sample all the initial your particles initially. by definition, this ensemble average give you your probability of this ensemble. Okay. Then what you do is you take the time derivative is one, and it's not. Okay. So, I see. Whoa, great, Canada. So, so by the definition, this is what you're trying to do. And because of a chain rule, the only time dependent parts come from your dynamics of your particle. And so you take the derivative of the psi and then introduce your dynamic variables. Substitute your dynamic evolution equation here, and so you change this into your equation I show in the last slide, chi here, and you change the variable. Oh, I see. So first of all, I distinguish between the sample space variable with some capital values compared to the dynamic variables. So what you do, you can change the variables from the small psi to capital psi and change the minor sign. So eventually what you need to do is ensemble average of the psi times the fine-grained PDF. Now, just expressing everything by definition, eventually what you get is conditional average of this chi here. Average conditioning on the psi times the times your Lagrangian PDF here. Now, finally, this gives you the evolution equation as a conservation equation. So, which means the time it's just a linear conservation. So probability is conserved. Okay, so makes sense. Now, because this is just the linear order partial differential equation, One standard way to solve this equation is a method of a characteristic. Okay, this is the only figure I try to Google, the only colorful figure I can find of this method. But no, right? Because this is still just a dust model. I will try to generalize later, but this is until now is still the dust model. Now, so when you do this method of characteristics, you try to present your solution as the integral curves determined by the vector fields of this coefficient of this PDE. Okay. So eventually this integral curve. So you have three variables for this. For example, textbook example. So you have introduced some parameter. The curve, you represent your surface as an ensemble of the integral curves. Now this is the figure. What I mean, what I have already done is I derived the evolution equation of this PDF from some initial. So this axis is the time evolution. Initially, you have, for example, some Gaussian distribution of your dynamic variables, your density or whatever else. Then you evolve into some skewed distribution. Something like that. And this evolution equation of the PDF, then you try to solve these characteristic curves. And because I don't really care about what's the evolution of the probability, I only care about the trajectory of your fluid dynamics. Then I just project that into this dynamic space, and this is the curve I get. So what I mean is the projected characteristic curves of this PDF evolution equation. So after a standard procedure, what you get is actually very simple. So it's very similar to your original dynamics. Your original dynamics, something like that, is just a chi. But so here, this is the coefficient of your PDF evolution equation. So it's just the conditioning on this psi. Since your evolution equation, there is only one extra degree freedom tidal tensor. So the only difference, the continuing equation and the Euler equation doesn't change anymore. And the only non-trivial equation is this one, the evolution equation of the shear tensor. So what you do is substitute your tidal tensor into some conditional average tidal tensor. By some sense, this gives you a mean trajectory, because at each time, the change rate, the rate of change of your dynamic variables is averaged over all the tidal tensor conditioning at the same dynamic variables. So what you do is eventually, so for example, this figure gives you starting from some localized, some initial condition, your trajectory, your real trajectory may vary into different different lines, but eventually you select the averaged trajectory, which is presented by this equation. Now, the other very interesting property of this solution is that if you're starting from the same initial condition and evolving the particles using this average dynamics, you will get exactly the same PDF, one-point PDF. So it's kind of trivial, because not trivial, but it's you can see that by substituting your average dynamics into your previous derivation. So what you have done is what you need to do is just to change this deep psi d tau into, not into this chi, but into this conditional psi chi. Since it's already been averaged, so it's still the same. Now, the other cavity here is that you, when you're trying to do the Lagrangian, because you are trying to trace the Lagrangian particles, the ensemble average is taken among all the particles. Now, see, on the other hand, your tidal field is expressed in Eulerian space. So you need to somehow connect this in Lagrangian ensemble average into the Eulerian average. The simplest trick you can do is instead of define the Lagrangian, you can define the PDF in Eulerian space by the density weighted PDF. This is exactly the same as the Lagrangian PDF means. So the real derivation is kind of a tricky, but what you eventually do is consider something, some quantity like this, and the Q is some kind of arbitrary function. And eventually what you get, exactly same evolution equation, just the only difference is this ensemble average here is Eulerian instead of Lagrangian. Even more, if you try to identify this density weighted PDF as the Lagrangian PDF, you will find that this coefficient we define here, Eulerian PDF, Eulerian conditional average, exactly the same as the Lagrangian PDF we defined before. So, okay, what time? Okay, so now since we already have the dynamic evolution equation, the only thing you need to do is to accurately estimate this conditional average of the tidal tensor. Now, the first step is very simple. You assume some Gaussian distribution. By definition, this conditional average is just the integration of your tidal tensor times the joint probability between your tidal tensor and the other dynamic variables. Like as. Right, yeah, this one?
The capital sigma I
too. Right, this, I mentioned that this is still the velocity shear, because because here.
The sigma, you have the sigma I too.
Sigma.
But this is
a sample space variable.
It's not sigma, it's become capital sigma.
Yeah, they are correspond to this one. It's the same, this is the velocity shear. In the sample space, because I'm trying to distinguish between the real dynamics and the sample space dynamics.
Sample space.
Yeah, probability sample space.
I see.
Right. So actually they are the same, if you see the dynamics, just this part. So what you need to do is actually, for Gaussian variables, the conditional average kind of, at least for cosmologies, is a really standard result. If you go back to the BBKS paper in 80s. So it's just linear proportional to your dynamic variables. And the coefficient is just the combination of the covariance between epsilon ij and your dynamic variables times the inverse of the psi-psi covariance matrix. So if you substitute all the definitions, all your quantities, eventually what you got is linear, because it's here you're just the traceless parts, they're only proportional to the traceless parts of the velocity shear. And so, and the coefficient is determined by the variance of your velocity and density fields. Now let's take a back a little bit and check the Zeldovich approximation first. In the Zeldovich approximation, you try to describe your particle evolution by the displacement field, which you define. You're starting from some initial Lagrangian position into a final Eulerian space, and the difference between them is described by the displacement field. And your dynamic equation is just the particle motion equation, and eventually you substitute everything, and this is what you get for the evolution of the psi here. Now, to the linear order, it's very simple. The psi is just proportional to the linear density contrast. On the other hand, because of the Poisson equation, your gravitational potential is also linear proportional to the density, the delta here. So this means that your velocity, your tidal tensor is linearly proportional to the velocity velocity shear. Now, you see, if you remember what I showed previously here, the only difference is here. But if you can, if you assume the linear continuity equation, which means the theta is just the minus h to f times the delta, f here is just the time derivative of your linear growth rate, and this coefficient become exactly the same, which means you actually recover the adaptive approximation. Now, people might ask, is the adaptive, well, does that mean it's too trivial? Well, actually, since we already know that the adaptive approximation is a localized description of your particle Lagrangian evolution, right? So if you consider this statistical closure method as some kind of a localization procedure, and what you do here is that, for example, you're starting from some initial distribution and evolve all your dynamics locally, eventually, and then you try to infer from this evolution of the PDF of what's the mean evolution of this, what's the effective evolution which could lead to the evolution of this PDF, then you will it's required that you will recover the adaptive transmission. And so what we show here means that we actually verified our method. So, however, on the other hand, for deriving the Zeldovich approximation, you assume the linear continuity equation, which means for the evolution equation of this of the theta here, you also change the source term from the density contrast into the theta here. Now, we already know for this, because of this reason, the Zeldovich approximation cannot recover the spherical collapsing model. Now, however, for our Gaussian closure method, we don't have to do this until trying to recover the Zeldovich approximation. So if you try to recover a spherical collapsing model, you simply set the shear into zero, and you don't have to change this part into the theta, which gave you the exact results of the shell crossing, exact result of a spherical collapsing, as I showed in the first several slides. So which means the Gaussian closure method could give the limit of both the adaptive approximation and the spherical collapse. Now, the second step is definitely try to go further to, for example, the nonlinear, non-Gaussian fields. One advantage of this method is, besides the tidal tensor, we didn't change anything else. We keep all the nonlinearity of the dynamics. We only try to model what's the evolution equation of the tidal tensor. Now, so it's very natural try to estimate the averaged tidal tensor in a non-Gaussian field. Well, the first step for the highly non-Gaussian case is probably very difficult, and I'm trying to do that. But the first step we're doing here is expand to some weakly non-Gaussian case. Now, again, by definition, your conditional average of the tidal tensor can be expressed something like that. This conditional average times the probability of the psi equals the integration of the joint probability between the tidal tensor and the psi. Now, in general, there is a theorem called the cumulant expansion theorem, which means you can expand almost arbitrary form of a PDF in terms of a Gaussian PDF. Now, the coefficient with the coefficient of the nth order of the cumulant, all the connected parts of the correlation function. So what you need to do is try to substitute your non-Gaussian, so you have to substitute both this one, the p psi here, and the p e psi here, into the using this cumulant expansion theorem. Now, if you just express that in expand to the third order, this is what you get. You get the extra term. This is from the extra term of the p psi, and this is from the term of the p gamma. Now, because of the integration, some of the term actually are zero. So the only term you eventually we will get is the there will be two terms with.
The details. So what is the origin of Margaussian energy that you're imagining? Do you think it's primordial or just the two?
Well, it can be both.
Primordial or it,
yes. Yes. Yeah. Nonlinear structure formation.
I see. But you've ignored shell crossing. So
right. I will. I have some arguments later, but we will see. So, right, this is just some details if you don't really, okay, anyway, so only one term would survive eventually. This is coming from, I forgot actually. Oh, this is from here, and this guy, there's two terms here. One is doesn't depend on your dynamic variable. The other depends on the quadratic form of variables. If you substitute the definition of this covariant matrix, it will show that this term actually cancel, vanish. So eventually, the correction term, the second order, the next order correction term of your conditional average is quadratic in terms of your dynamic variables. Consider your Gaussian closure is linear in terms of its dynamic variables. So eventually, after some algebra, you will get the correction is just some coefficient times the density plus the coefficient times the theta times the velocity shear tensor, and there will be a quadratic shear tensor, the traceless part of the sigma square, which I define as here. So it doesn't really matter what the coefficient looks like, but just you can, but just related to the three order, the third order cumulants here. And you can imagine, because this is the next order, you get the quadratic form. This is the first order, you get the linear form. So it's kind of imaginable that the higher order is just some kind of polynomial with the coefficient determined by the nth order of the cumulants. So this is the kind of a generalization I mentioned. So up to now, it's still a fluid description. That's the model. We haven't introduced like the shell crossing or anything else yet. But
sorry, yeah, I have a question.
Okay. So if I have learned anything by doing this, it's that everything is effective here. You're studying from some probability distribution. You didn't try to trace any particles. You're studying the evolution of the of your PDF and trying to understand why your PDF changed to some other shape. The only reason is because the particle moved here, right? I don't really mind what's the real trajectory here. So everything is effective. Now, there can be many different stochastic. Shell crossing is one thing, certainly. Everyone care about that. And also, if you try to use that to describe, for example, the halos, you have internal dynamics, all kinds of different complexity here. And also, so this is just an example why you can consider this shell crossing as kind of, okay, anyway, so this is not a well-written slide. Eventually, what I'm trying to do is I try to introduce some stochastic noise. Okay, I'm not trying to model this shell crossing. It's too complicated. But the fundamental line here is that it doesn't really matter. This is just an effective model. What you can do is.
But you already have a stochastic noise even before shell crossing. Because what you're doing is you're replacing the tidal tensor by its mean.
Right. It's not, well, it's. They definitely have some average and probability, but it's not the stochastic I mean here. When you say stochastic here, is that you don't, so
high-level sensor non-locally depends on all the
But the difference is how you can deal with it. So when you deal with, when you introduce something you totally don't know, so for the tidal tensor, you somehow know, you have some information about this tidal tensor. It's determined by the Poisson equation. You have some distribution. You have some, you have the relation of their covariance matrix between this actual degree of freedom, namely the tidal tensor, with your dynamic variables.
Right, but it's a non-local relation.
Right, this is non-local, but.
What you did was you replaced it by a local one.
Right.
So that, and that, in that process, what you did an averaging.
Right. But
then there would be a, basically noise terms.
Right, there will be some noise term. You don't know what's the correlation between this guy and your dynamic variables. And if you introduce that, and consider, for example, the most simply the way, most simply noise is the Markovian, which means at a different time it's uncorrelated. And the evolution equation of the PDF is just the focal Planck equation. Okay, this is what I mean by stochastic, because your dynamic,
right.
Your evolution equation of PDF is different. Right,
color.
Right, right.
So I guess the thing with the tidal tensor is it's most likely it's not white noise, because basically you have the structure that side.
Right. You get some information from your data. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, one possible application for this is that for the like the generation of the vorticity. You can consider the generation of vorticity as some driven by some noise noise term.
Right, and actually that's the classic example that you can calculate generation of vorticity by tidal effects, and that's,
yeah.
I guess you don't get that in your formal assumption, do you?
You mean the just the linear tidal?
I think people, you can basically, you can just.
Right. Yeah. It's not, right, not the same.
Yeah.
I guess somehow, if you study the dynamics carefully, you can somehow mix that part evolution, because eventually the tidal effects go to the evolution of the shear tensor,
yeah.
And so everything just coupled each with. So you see the evolution of the. So it should couple with each other, and in that case, I think that's just the model. And
there's a tidal tensor there. Right?
This is the vorticity tensor, and this is the shear tensor.
But the distant question is that if there is no vorticity, you cannot generate it except for the stochastic.
Right.
But in the original equation, there must be a tidal tensor.
No, tidal tensor is this is the anti-symmetric part of the velocity gradient tensor. You don't source.
Okay, you could just make it
right. So the only way you can generate, if you consider the vanishing primordial vorticity, the only thing you can generate is this term, right? So, well, this leads to my summary here. So first of all, I construct the statistical closure model, try to give you the average evolution of the fluid element in Newtonian cosmology. The one nice thing of this trajectory is the 1-point PDF is actually conserved. If you can estimate this conditional average term. Now, and to the Gaussian level, we recover the Weitz approximation, which give our confidence. And for the non-Gaussian level, this average tidal tensor give you some kind of a polynomial of the polynomial of your dynamic variables with the coefficient depends on your statistical fields. And how about the other generalizations? Because our goal is actually motivated by the modeling of the halos. Now, is that possible to pursue in that way? One thing, I have already mentioned, everything is effective. In principle, you can just carefully select your ensemble. You can just get some PDF evolution equation of your halos. Let's say that. And then you can get the evolution trajectory of these halos by doing exactly the same thing. Your only starting point is your evolution equation of the PDF. So To me, it seems to be possible. Only thing, if you try to do that analytically, you probably need to do some condition, other extra conditioning, like the pigs upon, or maybe other properties. So that's the first step, trying to use this method to model the evolution of the halos. The next step, if you follow the recent paper literatures about the halo evolution, one important thing is when you try to using, for example, the excursion set theory, try to describe the halo mass function, the criteria of the halo collapse should be stochastic, which means you're given the initial condition, your halo, what we just get is just the mean trajectory, but you also need the information about the scattering. This should be the next step. Now, I think I still have some time, and here is what I mean by the vorticity driven by the stochastic. So this is related to what I have done last year for the classification of the Cosmic Web. First of all, there are different methods you can use. For example, you just use the tidal tensor. On the other hand, you can use the velocity gradient tensor. What you can do is here, Aij is still the partial Vi partial Xj, and you can if this matrix is symmetric, you can decompose into eigenvalues. If everything is negative, you get halos. Everything is positive, you get voids, and you can get the filaments and wall structure as well. Well, one thing I did in this paper is instead of using this eigenvalues, I use the coefficient of the characteristic equation. There should be the one-to-one mapping between this coefficient and value of the eigenvalues. Well, the nice thing of using the coefficient instead of the eigenvalue is that if this matrix become anti-symmetric, the eigenvalue become complex. So it's not so easy to deal with, but still your coefficient are still real numbers. This leads to full classification of a different cosmic flow. First of all, there should be a three-dimensional parameter space. This is what I show in the first several slides about the comparing between the silent universe model and the Liudovich approximation model. So in this wedge shaped region, you still get all your cosmic web structure of the potential flow, meaning that you don't have the rotation, but you can also have introduced some rotational degree freedom, just as divided by this boundary lines here. So if you do the real measurement of, so we are very interesting the rotational classification of the cosmic web. There are several different. One thing you notice when you try to plot the spatial distribution of all these categories. So first of all, one thing is they seem to have different different distributions. For example, this one is basically along the filaments. This one is also along the filaments, but this one is basically around the knots of the filaments. Now, I can skip that. And so, for example, for this particular type, this means that your fluid elements is rotating inward and compressing in the third direction, and spatially it's around the halo north direction. So, parameter space, this blue region is initially for the potential flow of the knots. So this is where the real knots should reside, and this is the region when you try to find the rotational category of this one. So one possibility is that once you generate, since initially you don't have the shell you don't have the rotational degree freedom, once you have the shell crossing, the particle just travel from this region to the very nearby regions. This is what I mean by kind of a stochastic diffusion process. So similarly, you can this is what you you can travel to that region. This is their particular type, and also you can find other similar situations. For this one is for the filaments, and if you look at in this parameter space, it's possible to just travel from this filamentary region to this region. So one possibility is that you can describe such a rotational generation of a rotational degree freedom as the kind of a diffusive process, right? So you diffuse it in this parameter space from one region to the other region. Okay, thanks.
In the so-called standard model, lapacity is based on a FRW background. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, calculate fluctuations, structure growth, using Newtonian gravity, because supposedly the relativistic corrections are small. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's it. Mm-hmm. Produces predictions, make observations, it looks good. How does your formalism, what do you expect to find different? How do you verify this?
Verify our method or relativistic?
So,
first of all, one thing is, I'm not trying to construct some real model. Well, how do I say that? What I'm trying to do is, the goal is the effective trajectory, effective evolution of the single fluid elements. And my test is that if you're starting from all this, if you're starting from some initial condition using this dynamics instead of your real dynamics, eventually you get the same PDF. This will be guaranteed by your method.
What do I learn from this? That's different.
So I guess maybe another way is, what is the application that you have in mind?
That
you can do with this method and you cannot do with
other. Right. The method is because you try to describe the individual of the evolution of individual objects. You try to describe what's the evolution of the halos. In principle, you don't have that model because they are scattering. They are not uniquely determined by your initial condition, that, for example, the velocity field. It's determined by everything in the universe. So the model I'm trying to do, eventually my goal is try to construct, for example, the evolution of the halos, given the initial condition of the halos, like the density and the shape of the halos. And then you can say, okay, most of on average, the evolution of this halo should evolve like this instead of the other way. Most of the people in cosmology, people just use spherical collapsing or ellipsoidal collapsing and probably calibrated using simulation. But, well, eventually this is also, in principle, you should also calibrate in simulation, but you have a different starting point. You understand what you are doing.
Well, I mean, the standard method, I guess, is the experimental set, is that you have a random walk in, I guess, three eigenvalues, and then you have a collapse threshold which you calibrate with your simulations. I'm just wondering what would be different here, because are you doing the same thing? You have to calibrate it against simulations eventually.
Right, eventually, probably.
Yeah. So how is it different?
If I have to be honest, I was motivated by the stochastic part of this method, because that's the unsolved problem. You can say, and also the other possibility is here you just get the and also the next step should be to deriving the evolution of the conditional average, the scattering of the of this trajectory. That would be the next step, and this would be new. And and again, the method is different.
So again, we'll be meeting for dinner at 6 in the bistro here. Welcome to join. Let's thank you.